Welcome everyone to Taking Stock. Really excited today on September 27, 2024. Going to be chatting with John Wooten and some other community members detailing alternative trading systems and how they operate. You know, a lot of folks don't realize that an exchange is just a part of settlement. We all see these big tickers. We see them move in publicly. We see the order book, but that's just a small piece of the pie. And there's a variety of different types of ATS that I'm excited to kind of dig into and to talk a bit about some specific examples and also some future plans for advocacy and education, just to get this, raise the floor of understanding of this key part of the market. Now, John, you're someone who knows so much about this. I'm really happy that you got time to join us today. Thank you.
Oh, of course, Chad.
So, you know, kind of, I've given a bit of an overview here already, but, you know, beyond saying alternate trading system, which talk about, you know, a milquetoast, you know, kind of plain name, you know,
back when
can you
only
describe kind of
exchanges,
a bit more in detail, maybe a bit more exciting about what an ATS is and its place in the market historically?
Obviously, there was sort of this oligopoly on things, and they could charge these really high fixed commissions.
Quite interesting history how they evolved.
1975,
I think the most important
regulators came in and said
that
it's always been
have
this
competition on
prices,
exchanges,
and the cost.
And it opened the door
with that and with new computer systems. For Internet was sort of the glass breaker that introduced it by just running out of a computer in a small digital complex. They would match those trades off of the traditional exchanges and incentivize people to trade there by paying them the taker fees, paying them maker fees, charging the takers. So people that deposited or that added trades that weren't immediately filled would actually get paid to trade there and to build that liquidity away from what was the existing central the exchanges that had the liquidity. So it's really a story about liquidity and where the trading takes place. And over the years, there's 72 of them today. They've just grown and expanded from this small, different way to trade that had lower per transaction fees to really this huge swath where there's just so many venues to transact with. And they're really all just computer systems running order books. It's all sort of the same idea, but you have to have access to each and every one to operate and to route the trades there. And it's really just a whole involved process for every single time to configure these setups. So it makes the whole order execution leagues harder if you want to get the best price, because now you've got 100 different places to go that have their own prices, and only 20 of them will make their way into the actual price. And the other ones are sort of those dark markets. And it lets people with that preferential special access to them trade, maybe not at what's the absolute best price if everything was in one place, and instead do things in bulk in the dark that make them money on the spreads and at the expense of you really getting that best price on a fair, transparent, and holistic exchange. It's a game of computer, Shies.
Wow, thank you. So let me see if I can follow you correctly here. So these ATSs are relatively, it sounds like something more recent. They've been developing, becoming more and more common, and becoming a larger percentage of, like, let's call it a market share of settlement across, you know, all trade. So that's one progression. But you've mentioned that these ATS, some of them seem to not be as transparent or are not as open. Would you mind, and you mentioned the dark pools. Would you mind just speaking to a bit more of that? Cause I mean, I think a lot of folks, when they think about settlement and they think about an exchange, they're thinking about maybe the New York Stock Exchange or about NASDAQ, right? That's just a handful of these different exchanges that seem to be reflecting, price sentiment and movement. So what's going on there? How can we, you know, how can I, or how can you, or how can anyone listening, learn about what's happening on some of these alternate trading systems?
Yeah, it's really bizarre because it's not like you can just log in and see that order book, because the order book, right, is just a feed, you know, that level two, the quotes that you get for the buyers and the sellers in the market comes from these securities information processors, which are in aggregate and managed on the exchange side of things. But off the exchange, they have separate and different order books that you really can't access as just a general member of the public. And they're sort of hidden away in the realms of Wall Street and separated from that. The SIP is just a company. It's a company that is established and formalized in regulation NMS, the national market system that we have. And it's this big comprehensive regulation that you can read through hundreds of pages and see it spells out exactly how the exchanges have to route their information, their order book, all of the data they have to a feed that gets consolidated between the exchanges. It gets sent to the public. The brokers pay for it. The trades go through there and they get to you through that public route. But there's this whole other side of the market that it's still, after the trade happens, it still settles at DTCC. It's all consolidated at the end of the day, but it's not on that public order book. It's not on those exchanges where you actually have visibility by default into what's happening. You can see the bids, you can see the ask, and instead it's segmented away from the public light. And instead in the hands of just a couple of these big companies that run the servers that operate as the source of liquidity. And you put in your trades there and they can have their own ways to set it up. So they might not even show the potential offers that might be huge trades, and they might only do it on an anonymous basis between those participants, and it happens in the dark. A Street Smart Edge had a tool in it called the Block Trade Indicator that watches the settlement flow. And I remember for years watching this, and you would see hundreds of thousands of shares traded in one trade, and the transaction price of that trade was multiple percentage points away from the current stock price. And you can see that this was a big bulk deal that happened outside of the public light. And then they can route it through a bunch of different communications networks so that it doesn't actually get reported immediately. They can delay it for hours, sometimes longer, and keep it away from that public light so that the transaction can happen without moving the market, without having the fair effect of coming to the same place everyone else trades, and without providing you an opportunity to be that counterpart. And instead it's done outside and in that secrecy. And these are really some of the specialized areas where the wholesalers can come and find specialized pricing, find a really great deal that they don't see on the public side, or that they see as the market moving, and they can get that liquidity from someone else on Wall Street and not interact with the general public sentiment. And to dive down that hole, to learn about that hole, really dives, it goes straight into how these funds manage, how the market makers, now the high frequency guys, source that liquidity. And it just gets into the individual strategies that they use to build things, just because they have that preferential access, build these systems that can profit really without much risk, because they know what side and instantly normally how it's going to get filled. So you can know, okay, we have this side that wants to pay $10, this side will sell it to us for $10.20. And because the spread is large, we can do that off the exchange. We can make that profit, and it doesn't have to. And only we can do that, because other people don't have the access to this special spot of the market, this special area of liquidity that we have.
Yeah, that's completely fascinating. And so to kind of follow up on some of the items that you've mentioned, you know, first off, I guess I just want to confirm, you said kind of the jump that any of these ATSs, they have to go through, is it like a registration process, approval process? How are they kind of notated in the eyes of the SEC and of other regulators?
Yeah. So there is a form ATS, and they register with that. And it's a pretty extensive form. And there's an ongoing oversight of these ATSs. And they have to meet sort of the net capital requirements, the requirements you would expect for basic operations. And if they aren't in compliance with this whole regulation on ATSs, which is under the whole NMS superstructure, then they can get in trouble. They can be forced to stop operations. They can have investigations and fines. But it really is sort of like a little sister to the stock exchange in that they have this wide ability to execute trades that is not as stringently seen by the public and allows for all of the benefits and purviews you would expect from an exchange of securities, but without that public disclosure and access that you would not expect from the exchanges, but that should be available to your broker. And because it makes it just so much more complicated in having all these different places, these different rule sets, and these different standards between every single one of them, they all have their own kickbacks, their own fees for accessing their markets. It becomes really challenging to set everything up. So a lot of times you'll have a routing broker and they'll follow exactly what's happening with the ATSs, and they'll maintain those relationships with them, and they'll make sure that everything's up to par and look for those trading opportunities, so that instead of the broker that you see when you make the trade actually trying to go out and find the best trade, they'll just give it to this routing company, and the routing company will have maybe a market maker, a wholesaler, or a specialist that can find this liquidity that's not really what you would expect to see. But instead, they find it because they have gone through that registration process and can offer this special product, and it just fragments it away from a single point of execution and some say a sort of a fair market for the competing orders.
Yeah, that leads right into the next thing I wanted to ask about, because it sounds as though, you know, there's a formalized process, as you mentioned, and you know these entities are tracked, and it's not as though they're not operating in the dark in terms of, you know, regulators being unaware of what they're doing. But it sounds as though, you know, there's this term dark pools. There's this concept that larger entities are able to, as you mentioned, to exercise trade and exercise accessibility to liquidity without needing to kind of meet the market where it is. And it's interesting to me, I think, just a couple things on that, you know, first that the regulators seem content, you know, that this is a reasonable course of action, or there's a vacuum made perhaps in their view in the market space where this kind of service is valuable. And I guess whatever benefits that must provide to the market, are worth this, what do you call it? Asymmetric, this kind of dissolution of transparency where, you know, regular retail traders, they don't get to see what's going on here at all. And so not only would they are not able to react in real time to make educated changes to their own investment structure or their own plan trades, but it sounds as though the people that are actually, you know, active on these ATSs, these entities, they're able to benefit a lot more because they're not beholden to deliver the same price efficiency on a bid ask spread, for example, to a trader. Or you know, it's kind of more about a guarantee of access for the people that are able to access in the first place. Am I getting that right, John? And if that's the case, what do you think is the positive? Like, what's the pro about this structure, and why is it propagated so much over the last several decades?
Yeah, guys, I think it certainly helped. You know, the exchanges are charging, you know, 1% and plus some very high fees before all of these new entrants came to compete in the market. And so, you know, 40 years ago, it really helped compete at, you know, force them to build up computer infrastructure and to digitize their operations to lower those transaction costs and bring it down to fractions of fractions. You know, in Reg NMS, it's 0.3, right, for the rebate flow. And so early on, you know, decades ago, I think it definitely helped them build this yard. And now it's sort of this remnant that acts as almost a loophole for these companies that want to allow trading without going through the whole regime of enacting a transparent and fair pricing disclosure and access structure. And instead, they just want to execute it on their own and do their own special thing and not follow the open rules that are more broadly applied to exchanges. It gives them an avenue to do that, to act independently, to out outside, like you said, of the best process for the investors. And it's questionable. I'm with you as to what value that it allows, and definitely gives Wall Street a lot of value. But without a look into the market structure, it's quite questionable. Then as soon as you dive into it, then it's like, okay, well, maybe this isn't serving its best purpose anymore. Maybe it's spraying that liquidity out. And surely the large institutions will fight tooth and nail because they can scrape that small percentage off of those trades and keep that for themselves. But it should really just be applied to everyone, I think. And specifically on the regulation front, it's something that can sort of be forced to get commoditized so that everyone has the same disclosure standards. And they're not subject to this special treatment that just gives them a pass to go and do anything that they want without thinking about what's really best for the public.
So I think it was really interesting for me to hear you focus on the kind of progression in the normal brokerage space that retail uses, towards this zero fee, free at the point of service style that we've kind of developed, especially over the last, just 10, 15 years. And so can you talk a bit more about, if you don't mind, I'm just curious about the relationship that you see there, because it sounds to me like, if there's, fees attached to trades, and it sounds to me like, a huge amount of the volume that's going through these ATSs, these are large traders. These are privileged, investors or large fund groups that have access, that have, high AUM or something like that. And, so the lower the fee, the better it is for them, right? So why are the, if the bid ask spread that ends up being larger and the ATS, they're pocketing that, and that's kind of their niche in the market that they're seeing. They can get up to this 20 cent spread or whatever it might be. Yeah, then why is there an incentivization for so much of this large trade volume to go through an ATS and as opposed to something that's a bit more transparent? I think you touched on it a bit earlier, just in terms of that they can delay it hitting a ticker or delay reporting. But what's the advantage of that?
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to move the price, right? So they want to execute everything and get this great deal and match trades before they can actually get to the exchange to move the official price, move the MBBO, and to change the order books, because there's less liquidity there than there would be if there is 1,000 people trading and only 10 of them, their orders make it to the actual place where everyone gets to see the quote and the rest is all fulfilled in the dark behind the scenes. Then you have a lot more leeway keeping it off the exchange. It's not the ATS that extracts a lot of value, but the traders there that can come in and transact between each other without it a much wider spread than if all those 1,000 orders had to go onto that one market and they all had to compete directly with each other. And so with the no fee spread and with the kickbacks that they get for letting this manipulation happen in the dark, it's a really challenging structural question for how the market arranges these transactions. And obviously there's nothing that's going to ever be entirely free, and there's always going to be these hidden costs. And so really the answer and the key for us for bringing everything into the most efficient way it can be is if you just establish a uniform standard and a protocol that works for everything, for everyone. I think that really if you allow trading anywhere that's not a decentralized, nonprofit, and frictionless system, then you're always going to have, you'll always have arbitrage. You'll always have routing kickbacks, and you will always have payment for order flow. You'll have this lifeblood of a reverse incentive structure where instead of it being a need and a want to get best pricing for the client, that the payment for order flow, it's really minimal to that trading that gives the best process to the investor. It's free for them in the sense that they get the best price that they can get at the lowest cost that they can, and doesn't really respect their right to have the price that the market should be at if everything was really and can be in one place. It just comes down to uniform, standard, and efficient market, and letting the transaction cost for that protocol be the standard that's born, not the transaction costs and pricing that's established by a select few middlemen and arbitrarily passed down throughout the rest of the market.
Yeah, that definitely seems like it would be preferable, especially when there's so little transparency, it seems, about not only what is transpiring in terms of trade volume and settlement on these individual ATS, but just their processes, their fee structures, leadership, maybe limited access or limited ability to audit for individuals that are just trying to get a better understanding about how they can interact with the market around them. So certainly right there with you that, I'm always a proponent of further transparency, and certainly something that the SEC refers to as a dark pool or as dark pools seems like something we should illuminate a bit more. Just from the name alone. And I wanted to touch, to highlight, just make sure everyone understands the severity. Well, maybe that's a bit too, sensationalist of a word, but just how far along we've come in this, established ATS volume. On Bloomberg in 2022, Chairman Gary Gensler appeared in an interview and stated that at that time, over 90% of retail market orders, the vast majority, were actually being rerouted to also settle through dark pools. So that, and at that point, we're not talking about, huge trades coming from known market incumbents that are, operating in some massive way, but rather the rerouting of, from brokers rather than heading to NYSE or NASDAQ, they're prioritizing going through dark pools instead. And John, do you think the calculus is the same for brokers making those kinds of choices, or do you think something else is going into it?
Well, on Bloomberg, Chives, and all this transaction going to these dark pools, how do you think these brokers, these venues, how do you think they get access to that market in the first place? The data, the insights, and the communications, the connections into those exchanges. Through a platform like Bloomberg, you're talking tens of thousands of dollars a year per user for a system like that. It's certainly the definition of something that's completely off the table for Wall Street and then becomes the de facto industry standard for the Wall Street intermediaries, the ones that are routing that volume off of the exchanges. And there's only one reason they're doing it, to satisfy the shareholders, to increase the returns, and to just squeeze out a couple more fractions of a penny on every trade at your expense. It's like it's a hidden tax that's paid on every long-term investor's trade that goes towards these HFTs, that go toward these firms and satisfies the squeeze from these trades taken by this infrastructure. And it's unbelievable. It shouldn't happen. And and you have the oversight system looking in on that, seeing it happen, and it's antithetical, certainly, to the transparency standards that we'd expect for our most advanced, developed, and liquid stock market.
Yeah, I had not even realized the irony of those comments being made on a Bloomberg News interview. So that's well pointed out for those that don't know. John's talking about the Bloomberg Terminal, which is essentially like a private subscription that you can get to access more detailed trade information, but it's quite costly and out of the range for the vast majority of retail investors, certainly. Now, it's incredible, just this consolidation it seems like that is happening. Now, while I think you mentioned near the top that there's over 70 different, registered ATS at this time, but them being responsible for such a huge amount of trade volume, so it would seem, at least, we don't have direct statistics because they're not required to be disclosed publicly, but we have, you know, public comments from the SEC chairman indicating that it's a huge proportion of volume being routed in this direction. And so I guess I'm curious, John, maybe we can kind of move forward and talk a bit about, you know, are these ATS all structured the same? Are there, you know, innovators in that space? I know there's a lot of interest in the community, so I definitely want to speak a lot about T0, one of the ATSs which is probably growing fastest, or we don't really know necessarily in volume, but perhaps definitely in market sentiment and recognition. What are your thoughts on that as someone who's also, you know, involved and passionate in the space and watching these things?
Yeah, well, on the growth of the space and the numbers from earlier, one thing that's, I think, incredible about this is just like how the failure to deliver data had to go through FOIAs to make that public, it's the same thing just to get a list of these ATSs, because there isn't really that data disclosure, transparency, and reporting scheme that's required by the real stock exchanges. So just the list of all the ATSs is set up under the overview of the FOIA request, and it's done monthly through the FOIA structure. And I think that's it's very telling as to how much gets disclosed here from these systems. And it's definitely, I don't think, the greatest view. On the T0 case, I'll put a nest in the link here. Part of the challenge for me is that you're really just perpetuating the systems in place on Wall Street. So for them, the 1% trading fee, efficient markets don't have a 1% trading fee. And really what a lot of players in the space are doing with this link I've just shared is news from them on having and launching a company that just does the investor verifications for the users of the platform. And really what you're doing is just creating the same systems you would expect on the broker, on the Wall Street side, and bringing it to the same systems where it's still that central server, central intermediary, and the transactions are done on that one central ledger order book. And you'll never remove entirely the rent seeking fees from that because it's always going to be done under this. And it's the same thing with this verification system. This is something that can easily be done through protocol. It's Stellar's done through SEP 12. It's a very simple thing to standardize, open source, and to have as everyone working on the best system for identification. And versus the approach that Wall Street takes on making it a private C corporation that extracts rents and charges $60, $70 a person. It's just not as efficient as it really can be. And it's a hidden cost that gets passed on the back end. Every time you make that trade and you get that little nick off of 1%, 1%, 1%, 1%, it compounds and compounds. And 20 years down the line, now you've got 20% of your portfolio. You've got hundreds of thousands of dollars that have gone to these intermediaries in commissions and fees just because they operate a computer server that runs a limit order book that can collate the buyers and sellers for an asset. And it's just not an efficient way to transact.
I really appreciate your bringing that to the forefront of attention again during the conversation that, you know, there exists. You know, what we're talking about here, right, is this kind of this intermediary level, which is ultimately operating as a for-profit private entity. So naturally, when it is successful, it's extracting value from this greater system. And I like the way you phrased it earlier, that it's a hidden tax for long-term investors where, you know, their amount of equity in the market is going to appreciate less because value has been removed from the market to maintain or grow these other intermediary systems, which are, you know, operating as for profit, like on top of or adjacent to the necessary aspects of settlement. And while I'm bringing up the things you mentioned, my goodness, I had no idea that it was FOIA that was leading us to have any idea about those entities approved as ATSs. It's crazy to me that we wouldn't have a simple list of the, you know, if they're filling out and submitting a form to a government agency and then they're getting approval, one might imagine that we can just review the list of entities which were approved. So that's a damn shame. But I'm glad that we've got FOIA at least, if asking the right way to get some of this information. And on T0's front, you know, just to really dive in there, I think in our community online, and certainly in other communities as well, I see a lot of excitement about them. Maybe not necessarily about the idea that they're a growing ATS starting to offer some innovations, at least from my perspective. ATSs, you know, they don't typically do any of this larger retail access. They don't typically seek to do any kind of user validation. These things are not typically a part of their workflow. But people are excited because it engages with blockchain, and it's, you know, theoretically a more transparent answer to how dark pools have, how you know, dark pool focused ATSs have operated over the last, you know, several years. So would you speak to that a bit, John? You know, what are the major improvements that you see, if any, from how D0 is approaching the market space? And what do you think about the most common things that people will bring up, if you've seen it in the community as well? And just let me know if you haven't. But, you know, are these arguments or perspectives well-founded when it comes to thinking about, you know, if this is a good direction for settlement to go?
I think probably the closest parallel chives is when the stock exchanges in the early 2000s started buying some of these dark pools, some of these ATSs, and wrapping them into the exchanges infrastructure and the reporting systems that they had. So there would be sort of this lit ATS where you could have transactions. And the challenge I see is that you're really building this exact same Web2 centralization into these systemically important financial institutions where they're still controlled by these rent-seeking entities. And they will give you this infrastructure and sort of market is and build it as the general backbone of a society. And the big challenge I see with that is that with these ongoing systems, they should holistically and ideologically be owned by, for, and with the people, not just sold as a popular thing for the investors. So when they, you know, you can put these flash words, the blockchain and the things that they say on it, but at the end of the day, when you go in and you look at it and you execute the transactions, it's all really the same infrastructure built by a centralized company. It's designed for a central web page where you can go and interact with their computer servers and give them their trading fees. And then instead of being with a community of investors together, it's really a lot more isolated and something where you really don't have control over that platform. You don't have insights into its operations, and you don't see the specific mechanism. That's one big thing with Form ATS, is there are all these disclosures that they make to the SEC on exactly how they operate, exactly how their computer systems are set up, and that's something that is not available to the public, is not transparent to investors. And even if they sort of give you permission, special access to their systems, it's still something that will only grow to become worse and worse over time, since there will be this constant perpetual need to operate for the benefit of this one corporation. And again, getting back to why it needs to sort of be this nonprofit, decentralized, permissionless protocol that we can agree on. Once it becomes a decentralized protocol that is more on a computer network, blockchain network itself, then the trading functionality is no longer part of a business plan. It's no longer succumbed by this central actor. And instead, it's something that anybody can innovate on and build with, participate in, and interact with because of the fundamental design being decentralized and really not in the hands of a select few executives at one company.
I gotcha. So it sounds to me like, you know, although ATS is like T0, and they're not the only one that is kind of embracing the rhetoric around blockchain or some of the technology around blockchain when it comes to trying to facilitate wider access and settlement for retail, or at least, you know, that's how it's often phrased. It sounds like it's more of a concern that you have, and this is near and dear to my own heart as well. So I would tend to agree with this framing, but, you know, quarter after quarter, the endless march towards further profitability in capitalism is going to require larger and larger infringement over time on the users and on the user's ability to achieve, you know, meaningful gains or meaningful, like skilled arbitration of trades, because they need to keep padding their pockets, helping their stockholders or shareholders, to advance. That all makes good sense. And I'm appreciative of, the work that you do to bang the gong about that. And as we try to move forward and establish, some of these better systems. And I think that also is one thing I want to just mention a bit here too. I see a lot of confusion sometimes about, how some of these ATS, like T0, people will bring up custody. Cause I think a lot of the time when people think about blockchain, people are also thinking about custody and that they have some kind of more direct claim, that they have some kind of more direct involvement, because inherently there's this, blockchain, which is underpinning things. And I just want to take a moment to dive into that a little bit too. What kind of custodial implications are there if you're holding a token through a ATS, which is, tracking things on a public blockchain like T0, is proposing as doing? Are there any, how does this compare, for those that might be interested in custody, but maybe you're not intimately familiar with how it breaks out on a process level for companies like this?
Yeah, this is what I was discussing earlier this week with the SEC, and it's this question of where the assets get held. I'll put another link in the Nest that's directly related to that, and it's a little bit scary because the custody, when it's on these ATSs, when it's on these exchanges, it's really in their purview to maintain the direct balance, and it's specifically with the transfer agent to keep the direct list of the security holders. And with this link, it was a particular one that's in, and a lot of times it'll let you can sort of withdraw them onto the blockchain, so to speak, and move it around. And this one was using a cross-chain platform that a couple of years ago was hacked for hundreds of millions of dollars. And to think it's just really concerning that the infrastructure in place is not really up to par, up to standard. And it's also not real custody, because at the end of the day, with all of these systems, they are still only recording the true legal ownership on their centralized computer ledger. And it's not the actual chain that represents the transfers are more like credits and more like IOUs. And they're not a real movement of ownership until it gets reflected back to the underlying issuer ledger. And that is parallel to me handing you my stock certificate and that moving around in the market. But until it gets back to that transfer agent, it's not actually legally moved. And from the issuer's perspective, from the view of the custodian, that's all they see is that ultimate list of ownership. So it has to go through that whole cycle. And for these ATSs, that final ledger is still centralized. It's still the antiquated system of being a central ledger. So the way to actually get it in your name is only to have it in their central system. And when it's at another venue that might be on-chain, but it's really not allowing you to maintain your name on that share and to have real ownership, it's sort of like the paper ledger example. It only moves, it only transfers true ownership based on the permission of this central actor. Because of the way the systems are designed, they don't give the real legal transfer to an on-chain transfer. So if you want to actually have a transaction, you have to go through their system. That's the big thing here, is the ultimate goal is to force all the trading through their system where they can take that 1% fee. And that just doesn't happen if you let real legal transfer happen outside of the ATS. And that's why it will never happen outside of the ATS when there's a massive incentive to only allow trading through the process that gives you a 1% transaction fee, and becomes the ultimate record of the ownership. And it becomes easier to report that way. It's a lot more work. I've talked to some of the founders of the first very popular DEXs, and very quickly after they spike up, they get a lot of regulatory attention. And it was very difficult to reconcile for them the smart contract result codes that provide the buyers and sellers and the new public keys and the new transaction hashes and how much money was exchanged. And unless you go out and actually build that infrastructure on a decentralized ledger, which is what we're kind of, what we do, unless you go into the specifics and integrate it so that the trading is very transparently reported to the regulators, you have a real record of everything, and it's easy to see exactly what's happened, and it ended that everything is authorized, then you're never going to really have that on-chain legal title to it that you would expect when you're holding in a wallet. You have the keys. It says that it's in your account. Well, that's only really going to happen if the exchange itself is designed and the custodian, not the custodian, but the transfer agent itself, the real legal title is designed to be built around you having that self-custody, not built around a central exchange that charges a trading fee. They're really just antithetical to each other, and they will not happen at the same time. It's really, you have this central place where you can exchange and you can give us your money, or we can have real true ownership on the blockchain. And outside of that, it's just borrowing your shares from them, much like you borrow on the traditional broker system for the stock loans. It's just this IOU until you actually have it in your own name, and it might never get in your own name.
Thank you a lot for expanding on that. You know, I think for me, that's an excellent explanation of how what they're doing is significantly different from, you know, what, for example, DRS enthusiasts, ownership enthusiasts who want a relationship with their company are probably looking for, most of all. Your example with, you know, when one person is handing their stock certificate over to the other is, I think, a really terrific visual for, kind of what's actually happening under the hood here. At the end of the day, it's at this time, right? It's what is on the issuer ledger maintained by the transfer agent as dictated by the regulations in our system that truly defines what ownership is. And so if you wanted to embrace so many of the potential benefits and advances of, you know, of custody and of transparency and of convenience and liquidity of a blockchain market, then you need to do it at an earlier level. It needs to be something directly made possible by and built around, you know, for at the transfer agent level, it sounds like, because that is where, you know, that's where custody happens. And I know, of course, listeners know that that's so much of what you're working on. So that kind of leads me into a question that I, that just had crossed my mind while we were just chatting. And so this will be a little bit, this is adjacent. Yeah. You know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. So we know, you know, the project Block Transfer that you've put so much into, and we've talked about on the show multiple times, an operating transfer agent that is going to, you know, through the Stellar order book, allow for kind of this blend of the benefits of the different systems as we've been talking around for so much of the last 40 minutes or so. So would then, does that Stellar order book, and I tried to look this up, but I'd have to find the exact FOIA request. Are they considered an ATS? Have they gone through that approval process? And, you know, if not, you know, what are they considered? Or are equities in that sense just not traded on that platform so far? Would you mind talking a bit about that and kind of how that's different in the eyes of the SEC, if at all?
Yeah, the Stellar centralized exchange and the order book that's built into the Stellar network, I think is really unique. And has a really special place. Obviously, there is federal, there was a Wells notice, you know, earlier this year for the Uniswap protocol and the smart contracts that try to act as order books in the blockchain space. And ultimately, I think, a lot of the challenge there is that you still have that central party building a central system that operates the exchanging function. And that is, at least presently, always going to be something that has immense regulatory scrutiny, and will, you know, they're trying to apply all of these pre-existing rules, the rules that apply to these ATSs, to these new systems that are built by newly built by industry participants that are used for trading and designed with, you know, you have central control over the design. And really the big challenge there, just like how these ATSs can change their rules on a whim's notice and update their computer servers, it's a similar thing for these smart contracts where the whoever designs, whoever owns it, whether it's a multi-sig or a community, or even if it's a piece of public code that's just permanent, the design principles there are really what's under scrutiny, because it's still a small group of actors putting the set together. And the great thing about it is that it enables the transparency, the oversight that we want. One last link that I'll put down here is an investigation by just a normal individual user looking into the flow of funds on the blockchain. And this is really what true custody allows, is that you can have a very transparent reporting system, transparent scheme, and see exactly what happens and not have that inane complexity of the history of transactions and the movement of ownership records. These haven't really been executed very well until I discovered years ago the Stellar Decentralized Exchange. And the miracle of this system is that since it was created in 2014, it has been this network-wide system for executing transactions, facilitating bids and asks, and organizing liquidity on a decentralized basis. So anybody can, it runs directly on the validator level of the Stellar blockchain. So anyone can come spin up a validator, be part of that system. And the rule set that's applied to trade matching, that's used for validating offers, and that engages when a liquidity pool matches or when the order's crossed, that happens based on the entire network protocol. And it's exactly what you'd expect with a blockchain network, where the only way to upgrade it is to go through like the Bitcoin improvement process. The in Stellar, there are Stellar ecosystem proposals or core advancement proposals. And these are processes that the whole community comes around and forms a consensus on, so that there's no central arbiter or decision maker in how the matching executes, how the settlement happens. And instead, it's a uniform system that is completely codified and run by all the networks, run by all the validators. And in that sense, there is not like one person you can point to and say, this is the Stellar, this is the SDEX, is what I'll say for Stellar Decentralized Exchange. There's not one server you can go to and say, this is the SDEX. It's like Bitcoin. If you have all these Bitcoin validators, there's not one person you can point to and say, that's Bitcoin. It's this network of everyone acting in cohesion and unison for this common purpose of having liquidity so that you can facilitate payments, you can enable trade, and you can exchange these assets without going through a central intermediary. So with the SDEX, you have your own self-custodied wallet, and just like you would sign a transfer of coins, you can sign that you want to buy this much for so many dollars of whatever asset. And so when you go in to get shares in that company, as long as you have the authorizations around it, the network at a protocol level has a very robust set of authorizations you can use for regulated assets, so that only approved and authorized individuals, only those wallets can access the SDEX and can trade on that exchange. And instead of it going to just one person and that becomes the exchange, it's really that whole network. Everyone processes the transaction, everyone agrees on it, and everyone applies the transfer underlying settlement instantly. So, you know, every 5 seconds there's a ledger closed, and it's like a direct, immediate, atomized trade where the money goes from one person to the other person and the asset goes from one person to the other person. And either everything happens or nothing happens. And the protocol applies those rules. It makes it moves the assets, and it allows for this new protocol to emerge where anybody can transact without routing to one specific middleman, without going to any particular intermediary. And instead, it's just this rule set that applies. It's really the only distributed native rule set where there isn't that central arbiter that you're relying on. There are no select few middlemen that determine how everything works. And instead, it's really built on a community-wide basis where you can have the direct ownership, you get access to instant liquidity, and you have transparent reporting of what trades are available, how much liquidity is deposited, and exactly what the history of transactions is through the SDEX.
Yeah, it's an incredible piece of engineering that has been developed by the, you know, by initially that team and then maintained and grown by a diverse online community. And so correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, we could call Stellar, the SDEX, we could call it an alternate trading system, but at this time, like in terms of a description, but in terms of the actual, you know, regulatory definition, they don't currently at this time operate within the purview of like American public issued equity from companies, right? We're talking more about other kinds of digital asset that are trading on this network. Is that right, first off, John?
Yeah, so this is what we're working on right now on the comment letter for the transfer agent regulations. And obviously, since it's what we're operating on, we have our first inaugural client on there that we're using as a proof of data for, so the SEC can go and see exactly what everything looks like on chain. And there have been companies that tried to use this technology before through a custodial scheme. And it's just, like we know, it's not very, you know, you can comment on the custodials. If you just add another custodian and then you tokenize the assets, it's a fairly common approach that just kind of furthers all the questions and quandaries and challenges of the whole custody structure. And I think the big differentiator for me, because obviously that is the first question, is does it fall under the same thing that everything else falls under? And the thing for me is that there's really not somewhere you can point to for who controls this system. There's not someone you can point to for who sets the new rules for the system. And there's not someone you can point to for who actually executes the movement of the transaction here, because you have hundreds of validators spread across the world and all acting in unison. So if you're going to tell someone that they need to apply some rule set, you really can't do that to one network participant because they can't control any of this process. And instead, the only way to have any control over it is to go through the same proposal protocol process that everyone in the network goes through.
And do you perceive that, people that are operating on this network, I would imagine, you know, that I'll tell you, like for me, everything about this level of transparency and access would be terrific if we were able to apply it successfully to the larger traditional equities market. You know, and I'm sure a lot of the folks who are as invested as they need to be to, let's say, you know, run a node and contribute to the validation process of the broader SDEX, you know, they might agree that that's something well worth doing. Do you perceive, as we keep marching towards the future, that we're going to see more of a embrace from our regulators, that they're going to be interested in going through that process? Or do you perceive that, that it's going to be a bit tougher? Because, I mean, it sounds to me like they're going to have to walk and chew gum from a regulatory perspective, but maybe they've never walked in this way or chewed gum in this way before.
Well, I hope they can get their heads around it and appreciate it. It's exactly what we want to see, and it seems like really the most efficient path forward for markets. Nowadays, if you're sitting in DRS at an agent, you really have no liquidity. There's no way to manage those shares, no way to acquire more shares. It's all on its own without the basic mechanisms you would expect for capitalism. It's extremely difficult to even do it, just to transfer. And that's something where with the SDEX, it fits into this broader ecosystem of the Stellar network that gives you all this functionality that you would expect from just the root financial system. And anything that you want to do is just so much more efficient to move those stocks, to give shares, to participate as an investor in the market, and to have the custody very directly and transparently, so you know that it's not getting lent out behind your back. It seems so clearly as such this immaculate next step function change for sort of the structure of the markets, and specifically in the context of the central securities depositories that could have material challenges in the coming years, it seems very easily to slot in to the existing brokerage holding system where it just becomes the new clearing and settlement layer, so that instead of having to rely on the risk of these central intermediaries, if we assume that the investors' assets are actually, you know, held in their accounts and we can move the dollars directly between them when they trade, then it seems quite clear for me that you can have this very efficient system become the basis for all the transactions and not have any of that risk of a central intermediary, because now you just have this decentralized, permissionless, nonprofit protocol that acts as the common settlement layer, this open source tool for anybody to participate in, improve, and interact with, to that lets them manage their portfolio in a way where they really do own it, and it's all direct in the name. And for the participants that are using it now, it's a lot of work, and it's a big process to go through getting this to regulators. And so that's what so much of the work has been over the last few years, drafting everything, presenting it, and making sure that they understand it. A lot of work I'm doing right now, I'm actually working on the documentation page and on the Stellar's community documentation. So it's open source community documentation, and anybody with a GitHub account can go in there and make proposed changes and work on making things more clear and explaining how the protocol functions. So you can go in there, you can read exactly what it's doing, and then you can formalize it, and the community agrees on it, and everyone understands it and puts it out there. And it's framing it for them in a way that's digestible, and we're not, you know, the SEC doesn't have any they have limited resources. So I think it's on us to give them a simplified purview to put it on a platter for them and say, hey, this is something that can really benefit the entirety of the investing public, the participating companies, and the end world, if we just, you know, take this power away from Wall Street and instead put it in this system that really doesn't tend to any particular user. It doesn't bias anyone that has preferential access to a special trading venue, and it doesn't foster this power structure that gives access to just the few people that can afford those special data streaming services, and it puts you on the same playing field. It puts us all in a place where the trading is egalitarian. It's really something that is universal access for anyone. And ideally, right, there's just this one execution point, right? And because that liquidity begets liquidity, all of a sudden, all of the orders compete. They're all built into the same place. And you always know that when you route that trade, it's not going through a company behind the scenes, and that company behind the scenes sends it to 15 different other companies, and they all compete and then send that off to these, you know, dozens and dozens of exchanging venues. But instead, there's this very simple, transparent process where it goes from your wallet, it goes onto the network, and then it transacts on the transparent public order book. And because the ledgers close every 5 or 6 seconds, now there's not these raise conditions where people that have hundreds of microseconds faster connection to the exchange than you have an advantage and can trade against you based on their speed. When you slow it down, slowing down trading is something that blockchains finally let us do, because there's no longer this one central computer server where you can get physically closer to it than I can. And when you slow it down, now all this HFT worry completely dissipates, because the way it works with Stellar is everything will just execute at the same price if there's this cross market, right? So everyone gets that same fair execution that you would expect in an efficient system. Everyone that's building this, everyone that has put in this work, this whole community that's evolved around the network, is all really rallied behind this view that the entire world deserves access to the financial system, not just a select few intermediaries. And so the protocols are extremely efficient at becoming the real backbone of a society, because they're designed to work for everyone. Like, you know, months ago we talked about the quandary of the extremely slow rate of other blockchains, and this really does put that network effect at scale where you have that true fair execution system and a protocol that anyone can participate in the hands of investors like you and I, in the hands of the companies that are direct. I mean, there really shouldn't be more people here than the companies and their investors. There's no need for any other participants, and they can connect on this common protocol so that the capital gets put where it needs to go. And it just has such a compounding growth effect for the entire economy, because now you don't have these extractive rents or manipulatable systems that are controlled by quite often these corrupt middlemen.
Absolutely. It sounds so idyllic to be able to have a system under which, as you said, it's the companies and their investors, and of course those investors trading amongst themselves, and other asset types as well. I mean, that I think that's one further benefit that that can be really helpful, because it's you're just incorporating the liquidity access to so many other classes of asset when you're able to use a more homogenized system. And one thing that struck me while you were speaking and laying this out for folks is that the bizarre nomenclature of alternate trading systems from the SEC to begin with, thought about another way. You squint at that term and you realize it's betraying that there is a monopoly in trade, that a lot of people, maybe our listeners realize it, but a lot of general investors don't, that there's this, this centralized entity and this small handful of collaborating, self-regulating organizations, which have dictated how everything works and have, made a room for themselves in this market. And, they're not charities, they're providing a service and expecting to be paid for it. And I don't know what a transition will look like from, if we're at A and we're trying to get to B with more public embracing of an SDEX. But I have to imagine that it's going to start gradually. And you mentioned earlier, onboarding, one public company up to that system happening, in the future. And so that the SEC can see what's happening. That's something where, there's likely to be a period of time where both of these systems are operating, in tandem to each other. And I guess at one point there's an event horizon, right? Where maybe the DTCC it becomes the ATS. I mean, eventually, I think what you were maybe alluding to is that at some point the regulators would, from the top down, say, this system clearly is more efficient delivery and more fair access to liquidity, more transparent order books. We understand better about every little part of the market. We can better see, and not to mention all the benefits that come from custody, from a better realization of the profits and losses from trades, for the actual individuals rather than these middlemen getting involved. So we'll have to see. I guess I wonder about the regulators taking so big of a jump, when you're talking about this billion, or maybe billion's not even a big enough number, but this a huge industry that's cropped up around in organizing trade and settlement in this way. But as the availability for this transition continues to develop, and as people become more familiar with it, as companies become more familiar with it, if it becomes a reasonable option for them, and recognized by the SEC to engage with the broader market and to provide these freedoms and this access to their investors, there's only one way it can go. It just makes too much sense. that's my thinking anyways. I'm clearly biased.
I'm with you there, Chaz. On the for-profit front, on letting Wall Street's sort of building this hole for themselves, and it was really crazy, I think, reading the National Market System regulation and seeing it name specific corporations owned by them that get paid a very set price. There's this price fixed into the regulations for some, like the trading fees for the data reporting. And it's unbelievable until you realize that they really do have the control and power to set a formal standard for the whole industry. And I think it just comes down to their willingness to bring that change into part. It's this private company you're working with now. And part of the interesting distinction I've realized building all this is that the underlying infrastructure for the SDEX is the same, whether it's private company like we have now or a public company. It's all the same interfaces, the same protocols, the same systems affecting these transactions. And so it sort of blurs the line on the traditional securities regime. And most of the actual regulation is around the distribution and the original sale of the security from the underlying company. And after that, it's really up to the markets to move it around. And historically, it's been these intermediaries that are the gatekeepers for the regulators to go and apply regimes to. And the regimes are normally transparency because you have intrinsically with the old system, it's a company doing this and it's a central server they're working on and it's all permission system. So you want to make sure that they release this information out and do it in a way that, you know, because you really can't trust a one computer server to do the right thing. You have to have oversight onto that because of the risks associated with that central actor. And I think the real paradigm shift, the real change, and the real opportunity with the SDEX is now you have something that is no longer controlled by the one central actor. It's not something that anyone can go and modify tomorrow. And it doesn't expose the entire trading and settlement system down to the risks inherent in the current system. So like with the DTCC becoming this one ATS and everyone just transacting on that, this is a style that's been explored in India and Spain. And the incredible thing is that when you get rid of the credits and the netting and the margin that the brokers post to the settlement system in place, in lieu, and with, you know, instead of the actual money for the transaction where they put down a percentage of the value instead of the actual money transfer, well, all of a sudden, now you have, obviously, the intermediaries can't take that extra money and loan it out and get interest on it, but instead, it would actually go directly to the end investor. And Gensler gave a great seminar series at MIT that is very popular, where he talked, you know, someone asked him in the crowd, okay, well, why can we just move the whole market system onto the blockchain? And he said, no, it's very challenging because it's on this credit system, right? And it's the money's not actually sitting in the different accounts. It's all tied up in this huge superstructure of how Wall Street works, where only the sum margin is posted to some custodians. And that's why when, you know, Robinhood got this huge margin call when everything blew up and they had to waive these billions of excess margin calls to all of the Wall Street participants when everything went up, because of the risks inherent in the central clearing system. So because the central clearing, it centralizes the risk that someone will default. So instead of one broker not having enough money to go to the other broker, now the risk is that a couple of brokers fail and then the money's not there to settle up with everybody else. And so this is why obviously all of the recent work on forcing that OCC and the NSCC transparency has been so crucial, is making sure that, you know, that doesn't happen and that everyone's funds stay protected and secured. Well, when you move over, when you DRS, right, you take it out of that system, you withdraw from that system, and you take the title into your own hands so that it's not stuck up in the credit system anymore. Well, now you can have real debit transactions. You can exchange. I can give you the money, and you can give me the stock. And we can do that on this parallel route, being the SDEX and being real self-custody and holding it on the Stellar network. And it's just definitely I think it's a natural transition. It's a one-way transition towards taking it away from all this dispersed and segmented trading venues and just putting it on this one simplified, standardized, and decentralized system that acts through DRS to be this out from the old ways and now becomes the de facto standard. It becomes the interface that everyone can use to tie right into the markets. And instead of the old way of having a proprietary broker you go through and they give you the trading software, they give you the account management, and they are the ones that will recommend what stocks you buy and sell. Well, now you can have that be much more decentralized. That last one is decentralizing research, and you can have, you know, anyone individually go out and do their own prospectus, build their own interfaces, and build, align. I mean, one of the most important things here is that it's this open permissionless financial system, and it's all open source code. So anybody can go in, you can build interfaces. There are tons of interfaces to the SDEX today, and you can establish systems that anybody can connect to with their wallet. And now through this code that is available to everyone, you can interface directly. You can put in the orders and send that to the blockchain, and then it gets put directly on the network. It's a completely different system because now the transaction happens without going through any party. The interfacing happens without going through any party. You can run these things locally so that it's all done completely away from any intermediaries that would have any custody of your keys and your assets. And it's a completely different way that streamlines, simplifies, and segments all of the trading liquidity into a more efficient system that, as you said, has that transparency benefit and finally gives the interfacing back, not to just a couple of companies, but instead it's something where you can make it public. You can put it like the work we're doing on GitHub for YDRS to build these uniform systems for the databasing of public companies. Well, now we can do the same. I mean, that same thing already exists today for the SDEX, for these clients. You can go in, you can, instead of having your proprietary broker's trading software, you can have these SDEX interfaces that let you do all the exact same things you'd expect, but you know that you're getting a square deal. You know that you're getting the real market price because there's just that one source that becomes the uniform standard for everyone. And you can do the same thing with your trading apps, right? They don't have to be a centralized company anymore. They can just be a common standard that everyone uses, that's free and open source, free software that gets built into the root financial infrastructure that becomes the standard for anybody. And now it's not just people that meet the brokers, I can make enough money off of you requirement to open an account. It's really anybody that wants to better the futures and invest in the markets has access to that when before they wouldn't have any means to do so because you have to get that permission from that central intermediary. And now, you know, you can remove that bottleneck and set it so that everyone is set on this same playing field directly between the company and the other investors so that the system works for anyone and not, you know, only the ones that can profit Wall Street and only the ones that can further its own interests.
Yeah, it's excellent. I think that's a really wonderful thing to highlight, you know, that this is here already. It can be viewed, can be examined, can be audited, can be contributed to from anyone that's listening today, from anyone that's listening in the future. This sort of platform, this style of platform is built from the ground up with a prioritization for community involvement and I would call it like a philosophy that these things can be better developed and better maintained together by the collective of individuals that are benefiting from them rather than privatizing and making that, you know, that private benefit just this tiny group of hidden benefactors whom we rarely know their names, passions, affiliations in a broad public light when we're talking, you know, millions and millions of people trading billions and billions of dollars in equity constantly in the context of the traditional markets. So I think we've covered a lot of great ground here, John, you know, from alternative trading systems, how they're looked at by the SEC, what they typically are, and now in the context of SDEX, you know, what they can be in the future and what kind of transitions we can anticipate as we begin to embrace some of this more emerging technology to try to improve things for the majority of market participants. And to not only that, but to open up the market to new participants through this democratization of access and making things, you know, easier, more transparent, more consistent, more trustworthy for those that might today be avoiding participation because they have concerns in one of those realms. I wanted to ask if there's anything that Yeah, anything that pops into your mind that you might want to bring up, or anything that you think we could cover a little bit more depth, just as we've been going on a while, and I think we did a really great overview and a few deep dives here.
Yeah, I think they're with you there, Chives. The Stellar Global Ledger, it turns 10 years old on Monday, and something that's done through the DEX, $24 billion of transactions. And there's really nothing else that I've seen where you really do have this decentralized agreement on the rule set, on the protocol, and on the order matching, that is not, some specific person's set of code and instructions or computer server in the case of these old regulated ATSs. And, incredible to see that it was created so early in the timeline of Web3 and blockchain, and has had this time to mature and become something that is, that has been reliable. It continues to be this common standard and provides a real steadfast promise of something that can serve the world. It's been used for aid in Ukraine for years now, and subject to extreme attacks on the whole network front side of things, and maintained it exceedingly. It's really stepped up and kept that integrity because of its unique consensus procedures that were pioneered in the very early days, and have over the years been, you can look back and say, wow, they've really done something from my view that is quite technically impressive on a lot of fronts, and provides a very unique set of tools, set of basic functionality that are the basis of a capitalist economy, that are the core systems you need in a record keeping network, and the basic scaling infrastructure in place to take that to the next level on serving as the world's exchange. There's a whole lot of more research that ongoing there, but again, it's already really where it needs to be today to tackle the volumes. One of the really interesting things here is now you can spread out the trading, right? You don't have to trade from the market hours of New York, and instead we have this global system we want to build. Well, now we can trade 24/7 so that it is on this global time frame, and the rules are always applied the same way for everyone throughout that day range. And so it's just a whole lot more spread out, a lot more egalitarian, and open to anyone to invest in the greatest assets that are available in the market.
There you go. I mean, I'm fired up. I'm wanting to learn more and more about Stellar. And I think that, sounds like this weekend is a great time to do it, because 10-year birthday on Monday. That's amazing. I didn't even know that when we planned this topic. Really incredible to have heard that. And I think, for any listening, do some research into Stellar this, this weekend for a little birthday gift. I think there's nothing the community would like more than more people to join it. And don't worry if you're listening to this next month or next year, belated birthday gifts are also always welcome, I'm sure. Okay, thank you, John. And, we have a couple of live listeners here. I just want to take a sec, if anyone is interested to come up and speak a bit about ATS from T0 to SDEX to anything else, the concept or the entity. We would love to, I'm sure, chat on that, but otherwise we can start to wrap it up. How do you feel about that, John?
With you there, Chives. It was really interesting seeing Jim Aracon's perspective before and while people come up to think about who owns, some of these incumbent systems. Whereas with blockchain, it's sort of owned by everyone. It's part of everyone's common system. And it follows that real Web3 ethos that anyone can participate and become part of the network. With these old systems, it's interesting to see some of the vested interests, the companies that are public and run everything, making, being worth tens of billions, nearly $100 billion, and making billions of dollars a year off of these trading fees. And it's just, mind boggling, at least for me, to think, well, what would happen if those billions of dollars went back into the investors' pockets? Because it wasn't so convoluted to make these transactions in the first place.
Right, exactly. And it's incredible to think too that, as there are so many emergent entities in this space, innovation happening in this space, and the private capital entering into this space, you know, clearly there's a view or an understanding that it's going to be profitable. I mean, that's why, you know, that's why these groups are developing their presence. And as you say, I mean, so not only what all of the equity, which is being, you know, sapped away by all these kind of additional layers onto our market structure today, but clearly the private sector seems to be of the opinion that that proportion is going to grow, and that's why they're investing into it, right?
Anything they can do to take a chunk of the portfolio, Chives.
Yes. Yes. I suppose that all comes, it all comes down to that. I mean, why have X when you can have X plus one?
It's awful. I mean, they see your investments as their opportunity to profit. And, you know, it doesn't need to be like that. You can have a common nonprofit financial system that works for everyone. You can build things the right way so that they don't require these intermediaries that incur these transaction costs. And it can be done by everyone. Anyone can participate and secure that system, build it to the next level, and turn it into something that is stellar, to something that is just absolutely incredible for everyone. And that is the promise of decentralization, the idea that anyone can join and bring it to the forefront in their own local community and turn it into the basic mechanism for transactions. It's just unbelievable how siloed all these financial systems are today. And it doesn't have to be like that. We can have everything standardized. We can put it in one place where it's not controlled by a group of companies, but really is just an open, permissionless nonprofit network, and puts it into the forefront of what people need, not what these institutions want. I see Bert came up as a speaker. What do you think on that?
I tend to agree with everything you're saying. I guess my concern or my thought would be is, you know, fees are only an issue in the absence of value. I mean, you're, I guess, assuming, and maybe I'm wrong, I jumped in a little bit late, so, you know, please excuse maybe the way this will sound, but, you know, you still kind of talk about centralized clearing and settling. You know, what about illiquid assets or things that are, you know, illiquid? You know, someone's still potentially performing that marker making function, or did I misunderstand that?
So I've done a few thousand trades on the SDEX, and the question of liquidity is certainly the central, very important part of everything. And I think the biggest thing is when you post an order onto the Stellar network, it will stay there until it's filled. So you can post your buy order and you can see everyone else's buy orders and everyone else's sell orders, and that becomes the market. So if you need liquidity, it's all in that central place where you can see at once the offer and interest of the market. So if you want to go in there, and I've done this, and you'd be a market maker, you're on both sides, you're constantly doing the transaction on a liquid asset or non-liquid asset, then that's something that you can do as long as you hold that asset. Well, now you can submit to the network the new offers, you can submit to the network the liquidity pool, you can automate the infrastructure, and all of a sudden, the liquidity is directly on chain. So you don't have to go through one particular person. It's the order book that has the full record of what people will pay for it and what everyone's selling it for. That's maintained by the whole protocol, by the whole network, and by the whole ecosystem. Does that make sense, Burr?
No, that does. Thank you very much.
I was curious just to kind of jump off of that a little bit, because let's say it sounds to me like, John, one of the major pros, if we think about how this kind of SDEX, an exchange like this, wherever the order book is open, you know, and liquidity is genuine, coming from, you know, interested buyers, interested sellers being matched up by this system and system of validators. let's say that you want to, that you want to sell something, but no one is interested in buying it, even at whatever the most recent market price was, or if it's a niche asset, or perhaps the same, the opposite. I suppose that one might think, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, that there may still be niches, even in a future where this kind of system is embraced and prioritized from a top-down regulatory perspective, there may still be a niche for the access to immediate liquidity that, a prior custodial system can guarantee. That's probably, I think if we asked plenty of folks familiar with these different options for settlement, they might say one of the most important benefits of our current system is that if you want the liquidity, it is there, like guaranteed, because there's going to be some entity which is going to step up and assume maybe we could call it like a temporary risk if there isn't immediate access to a buyer for your sale or a sale for your buy, what do you think about that? And is it even important for Stellar to be, is there a need for Stellar to try to amend to that? Or is it, I think it's just fine without that perspective and leave it as a niche. What do you guys think?
I think you asked John, but I would say that's, there's a niche market there, a cottage industry for illiquid assets or more of a broker-based assist, right? The blockchain can solve a lot of the problems, but, there are illiquid assets, things that aren't overly desirable that may need a private network or the touch of a broker or some kind of CPA. But no, the framework, I would say, is there. But yeah, there's always going to be a cottage industry for, matchmaking, I would assume. John, what do you think?
Well, I certainly traded on the SDEX some newer assets that had very thin markets. I've put orders on books that have had absolutely no other buyers, like you're saying. And certainly sometimes for a trade like that, you have to wait a couple of days for people to sell to you and to fill. I've seen the same thing on the traditional market side where I'll put a limit order in, but I'll do it at a price that I think is good, not the market, and it takes some time for it to fill. And for me, the question becomes, what is liquidity? What is this market making? What are these brokers even doing in the first place when they reach out to these other deal facilitators, so to speak, on the private world? And for me, I answer that, it's like, well, wait a minute, isn't that just posting offers and asks and spreads? Isn't that just providing orders on the order book? And if we can agree that really what they're doing is just providing order, putting in bids, putting in offers, putting in asks, you can do the exact same thing. And I have built bots that do market making on stablecoins for Stellar that do the exact same thing. And it just, instead of happening on a New York Stock Exchange, instead of happening on this dark pool, instead of happening in all these fragmented places, they happen on one uniform standard, so that if anybody, even if somebody, you find somebody in the real world and you say you should buy this thing, okay, sure, fine. The way it works is they submit that order to the network and it shows up on the order book and it's still crossing on the order book. So as long as the SDEX becomes the ultimate execution venue for all these transactions, and it becomes the place where people go to do their trades, well, then it's the standard in the sense that all you have to do is move from doing the market making on the incumbent, on the old system, on the centralized system, and just do the market making on the decentralized system. Put that liquidity on the decentralized system, and it will stay there. The liquidity, it begets liquidity, and that's why the old system has these historic advantages. But the custody implications could move the whole sector onto the SDEX, and then it would be the same participants with the same money putting the same offers to buy and sell, and they're just doing it on this decentralized, unified, and standardized protocol that everyone agrees to instead. So there is this one place so that no matter who wants to do the transaction, they'll always put the price, because, that's what liquidity is, right? There are transactions execute because there are bids or there are asks. A market order is just executing against that existing stack of orders. And, that's all markets are. They're just one big order book. And what do you think on that, Burr? Because now once we have a unified system, then that becomes what everyone puts their orders on.
Well, it doesn't sound like that, and maybe this is not the correct way to say it. You're not actually providing liquidity. You're actually matching buyers and sellers. You know, you're not creating synthetic liquidity to facilitate trading activity for the sake of it. If you're matching buyers and sellers at, you know, publicly agreed upon prices, well, you're just exchanging, cash or currency for, the asset. So it's not even so much, it doesn't even sound like it's a liquidity pool if you're just matching buyers and sellers. The liquidity, in my perspective, and it could be wrong, is, the market making function of taking the trades and orders that no one else can facilitate or would want to facilitate. Is that a fair way to think about it or no?
Gotcha. I see what you're saying, Burr. So Stellar has a unique crowdsource approach to it that across the blockchain industry called liquidity pools, where you can deposit 50% dollar, 50% whatever the other asset is. And then it uses what you'd expect from a liquidity pool on an automated fashion to transact for that investor. So if there is no one else willing to buy or sell the asset, but there's liquidity deposited on a liquidity pool, the SDEX also has on top of it built these liquidity pools that anyone can deposit into any amount of funds and just depositing in at the going ratio for the price. And then it's what you would expect on an automated market maker instead of a central intermediary determining it's exactly, what the exchanging price should be. It just follows that liquidity pool model of a bonding curve. So this is the price of the assets will always multiply up to the same factor. So it will trade if you want to trade, depending on how much you want to trade, it moves the price that you'll get for it based on math, based on publicly agreed upon functions. These are things that everyone came together, put the protocol around and agreed that this is a good way to do automated liquidity. So that there is always that market of last resort. There is always that venue where as long as enough of the DRS investors who come in and say they believe in this asset and they want to hold it long term, they deposit into the liquidity pool. Now it'll do the trades automatically for them. And then it'll, these liquidity pools, naturally they charge these small, defined, agreed on expenses for executing these trades at the given price. And that's the yield for the investors. So you could earn, yield on your assets. This is the standard way that liquidity pools are implemented across the industry. And now it's sort of everybody participating in that market making function rather than a select few brokers, so to speak.
Yeah, that's incredible. Thanks for kind of expanding on that, John. That's excellent. More distribution of access and of ability is a really terrific thing. And then, for the individuals that are interested to engage, some of their equity with that part of the market, better that it be distributed to them than, through an intermediary. At least, that's generally how I tend to approach things. That does sound pretty appealing.
And that's one of the key things here is that anybody can join and participate in the system. Anyone can do the market making if they want to set the prices themselves, or they can deposit into these liquidity pools, which are common across the whole protocol. They're defined through distributed consensus and they affect transactions on a decentralized basis at the protocol level. It's really the only system I've seen that does this without any central intermediary, and it's all still your keys. It's all still your asset. It's all in your name. But and on top of all those benefits, you also have access to this full set of features available through the network that are defined on the blockchain and give you that direct democratic participation in building liquidity in this sense, in the liquidity pools in particular, is really just a way of crowdsourcing that liquidity and giving the power to the users that maybe don't want to put the infrastructure in place to constantly update. It's a lot of work to constantly update your bids and your asks based on how the market moves. And that is a piece of technology that's been developing for years and years across the blockchain sector. And now, or it's sort of this standard in Web3. And then once it becomes standardized, once it becomes uniform, once it becomes collectively agreed on, we can embed it into the protocol. And that is a system that we can, you know, everyone can use. And it is in use across hundreds of assets with huge, you know, very immense liquidity in place today on Stellar, executing using through this SDEX system. Really, I'd say a very unique crowdsourced, decentralized, and distributed approach to liquidity itself. Does that make sense, Bert? It's definitely less of a focus on the individual specialist.
No. It makes a ton of sense. I was just kind of trying to nerd out a little bit, and you know, I'm driving, so I'm, you know, appreciate you expanding on the concepts and the ideas. So thank you very much. No, it makes a tremendous amount of sense for me. I was just thinking maybe three steps ahead. You know, you have all these legacy licensed professionals that are handicapped or kneecapped. I mean, you could also still potentially offer professional advice for alternative assets. Now we can talk about the, you know, the definition of an ATN or an ATS and how to make that work. But no, the ability to have publicly available, transparent ledgering systems to help make intelligent decisions on your own, or maybe with the aid of a professional, seems like a net benefit to everybody. So congratulations on 10 years of hard work and everything you guys have been able to put together. I think it's outstanding.
Well, thanks, Bert. I mean, it's definitely everyone working on it. I definitely wouldn't credit anything in BitTech. It's this massive group of individuals all building this incredible system for this unique purpose of empowering everyone in the world to have access to the financial system. And it's a mission that's inspired me ever since I learned about it, and just the technology behind it has only impressed me, and it's built by some incredibly genius minds.
Well, yeah, it chives. Thank you very much for allowing me up, and thank you very much for doing this publicly with John. And John, I appreciate you being so willing and open to answer questions. You know, so thank you very much. It's really outstanding. And well, yeah, I understand it took a lot of really great minds to get this far, but the point is still the same. You guys are killing it. So thank you for allowing me up, and thank you for answering some questions. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for coming by, Burr. It's been great to be speaking with you every time you come up. And thank you for those kind words. And I think John, you know, the passion that you're describing for this, you know, open, decentralized contribution network, and you know, building towards this better future for participants. I mean, that's your words are probably going to be inspiring others, just like others have inspired you. And it's a great thing to be part of.
Well, I appreciate that, Chais. It's a lot to think on the liquidity front. How do you see this all expanding into? One thing is this idea that really we, you know, investors themselves can be in control of that market system and really have that direct participation. And, you know, do you think that everything works towards that unified, decentralized future?
Well, I certainly think, to echo what Burr said just a moment ago, that moving towards something like that, where you have just a general increase in the amount of access that individuals have and the amount of security that they can feel for their securities, you know, just through a custodial maintained network where that's the norm rather than the exception, these things are net positives. And there's no way to predict how quickly a transition could happen or what kind of space in the vacuum it's going to fill as people become more and more aware about these alternatives. I'm one who tends to think that, that there will be, you know, more, you know, ancillary networks that are continuing to operate, more professionals that are continuing to operate in that space. And that's fine. You know, I mean, part of part of the system that we're in is a competition between greater ideas. And what we're describing here is a departure from, you know, how things have been done for a long time. And it needs to be able to win out just on its own merits, which I believe that it can. But that's something where the process from A to B, you know, we although we can't see exactly how that will shape, I think clearly there's a ton of different benefits for the majority of different market participants that, and once they really appreciate them, you know, there are alternative systems which can be beneficial as opposed to the alternative systems which, you know, in the SEC's eyes today, you know, will often just facilitate, you know, again, 90%+ of retail trade orders, not actually affecting the ticker price, for example. You know, it's a crazy world that we're living in. It's a crazy market that we're trading in, and things can improve. But, you know, with all that being said, I think we've covered a lot of great ground here, and, you know, we'll let Burr get back to driving safely, and John, we can let you get to your afternoon. And, yeah, just a great topic. Great chat with you guys. Any closing thoughts?
With you there, Chais, it's not how it should be. It's not how it has to be. And can all get changed when we bring the liquidity into our own ownership.
There you go. Perfect and succinct. Yeah, thanks so much, both you guys, for stopping in and all the incredible time and effort that goes into all of this. And, you know, we'll see everybody next week. Have a great weekend. Oh, and don't forget to wish Stellar a happy 10th birthday. See you guys.